Because of the bodily conception of life, the conditioned soul thinks that when the body is annihilated, the living being is annihilated. Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the Supreme Controller, the Super Soul of all living entities. Because he has no material body, he has no false conception of I and mine. It is therefore incorrect to think that he feels pleasure or pain when blasphemed or offered prayers. This is impossible for him. Thus he has no friend and no enemy and no friend. When he chastises the demons, it is for their good. And when he accepts the prayers of the devotees, it is for their good. He is affected neither by prayers nor by blasphemy. Purport by His Divine Grace, Sesi Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Because of being covered by material bodies, the conditioned souls, including even greatly learned scholars and falsely educated professors, all think that as soon as the body is finished, everything is finished. This is due to their bodily conception of life. Krishna has no such bodily conception, nor is his body different from his self. Therefore, since Krishna has no material conception of life, how can he be affected by material prayers and accusations? Krishna's body is described herewith as Kaivalya, non-different from himself. Since everyone has a material bodily conception of life, if Krishna had such a conception, what would be the difference between Krishna and the conditioned soul? Krishna's instructions in Bhagavad Gita are accepted as final because he does not possess a material body. As soon as one has a material body, he has four deficiencies. But since Krishna does not possess a material body, he has no deficiencies. He is always spiritually conscious and blissful. Ishvara Parama Krishna Sachidananda Vigraha. His form is eternal, blissful knowledge. Satchidananda Vigraha, Anadi Chinmaya Rasa, and Kaivalya are the same. Krishna can expand himself as Paramatma. This is confirmed. The Lord is the Paramatma, the Atma or Super Self of all individual souls. Therefore, it must naturally be concluded that he has no defective bodily conceptions. Although situated in everyone's body, he has no bodily conception of life. He is always free from such conceptions, and thus he cannot be affected by anything in relation to the material body of the jiva. When Krishna punishes a demon or conditioned soul, he stops that soul's habit of blaspheming him, and when the soul becomes completely pure, the Lord takes him back to Godhead. Translation again, please repeat. Because of the bodily conception of life, the conditioned soul thinks that when the body is annihilated, the living being is annihilated. Lord Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is the Supreme Controller, the Super Soul of all living entities. Because he has no material body, he has no false conception of I and mine. It is therefore incorrect to think that he feels pleasure or pain when blasphemed or offered prayers. This is impossible for him. Thus he has no enemy and no friend. When he chastises the demons, it is for their good. And when he accepts the prayers of the devotees, it is for their good. He is affected neither by prayers nor by blasphemy. Om Agyanata Namanda Zilganandi Lashalakaya Takshidam Banitam Yena Taisma Shri Guru Vedana. this verse further explains how it is that the Lord is impartial, because he is not affected by the dualities of means by which living entities approach him, the devotees by offering prayers, the non-devotees by offering blasphemies. Krishna simply reciprocates with whatever way we approach him for the upliftment and benefit of the jivas. The difference in Krishna's treatment of the jivas is due to the difference in their approach towards him. Krishna is impartially always endeavoring for the upliftment of the totality of all jivas, desiring that they all return back home, back to Godhead. And he reciprocates with each and every individual in a way that will help them on their path. And as a loving father is always vigilant to the welfare of his children, rewarding or punishing them according to their activities, but always impartially seeking their welfare. And the Lord's representative in this world reciprocates with our approach, our faith, our love and trust in revealing different depths of intimacy of the soul's relationship with Godhead. For the devotees, Krishna actually subordinates himself to their love. When the devotee invites Krishna, he comes. When the devotee feeds Krishna, he eats. When the devotee calls Krishna, he answers. And when the devotee puts Krishna to rest, Krishna pretends to sleep. And desiring the welfare, the upliftment, the return of all his parts and parcels, Krishna orchestrates the entire cosmic manifestation just for the welfare of his devotees. He leaves it on automatic control for the non-devotees, those who are simply interested in actions and reactions within the three modes of material nature. That when one seeks relief from the actions and reactions of their karma within the three-dimensional realm of material nature, that relief, and relief is just the beginning of our approach to God. Dharma, artha, kama, moksha, turning to God for economic development for the sake of sense enjoyment, all masquerading under the guise of religion, and then turning back to God, frustrated with it all, to give me relief. These are all selfish. But liberation is the first serious approach to the Lord, the first call which he must personally answer. But when we actually desire the welfare of the soul, which is a loving communion with the Supreme Lord, that necessitates help from above, from beyond the three modes, from beyond the realm of time, from beyond the material cosmos itself. And Krishna helps by personally directing the devotees' lives in such a way that they will become free from the entanglements of material nature and progress on the path back to Godhead. And whoever endears himself to the servant of the Lord's representative, is gradually granted entrance into the loving heart of the Lord. So the Lord is always providing impartially for the welfare of all living entities, the seasonal changes, the harvests, the flow of the rivers, the growth of the grains. He's always providing for everyone. But in and above and beyond all that, he is forever sending his representatives from the spiritual world to, by their example and by their instructions, to reawaken our natural propensity to serve the Lord. Everyone in this material world is like in a comatose condition of amnesia. They've forgotten their identity, their welfare, their home, and their loved ones. So what to do with one in this state of amnesia? One thing to do is to take them, is to simulate their home, family, friends, and normal dealings. And that will gradually reawaken their lost memory of their natural function and condition. So the Lord sends his representatives to this world to teach us, to remind us that our natural function is to be attracted to Krishna and reciprocate with his love in grateful obeisances and loving devotional service. So, and actually, a devotee sees everything different in this world. He sees Krishna's wonder. He hears Krishna's call. He sees Krishna's mercy and love manifest through everything and everyone of this creation. Because actually, why did the Lord call, even create this cosmic manifestation, if not at every turn to be calling his servants back home? The problem is the conditioned souls, they blindfold themselves. They hold their ears so tightly, so desperately, because they do not want to hear the call of God, which is resounding through everything in creation. And in that sense, the whole even cosmic manifestation is the manifestation of his lila, of trying to attract the hearts of the conditioned souls back to the eternal shelter of his loving service. And in this dark material world, which requires artificial lighting in the form of sun and moon and stars, what to speak of the double artificial lighting of electric lights, which divorces us all the more from the rhythms of nature and the call of Krishna. There are the more lasting luminaries that appear in this world, whose light and lives and love shines even beyond the dissolution of this material world. Shukadeva Goswami, using the beautiful natural arrangements, demonstrations of the Absolute Truth in Braj Bhumi, explains how the fireflies are like the pseudo-religionists, pseudo-philosophers, pseudo-gurus, who seem to give off considerable amount of light in the rainy season, when the sky is so densely overcast with dark clouds that the brilliance of the sun, moon, and stars is completely blocked. And these fireflies seem to give off so much light and be so attractive. But when the clouds part and the moon or the sun shines through, the fireflies become invisible. So the fireflies are like the pseudo-gurus, pseudo-yogis, pseudo-incarnations, who seem to give off some light in the absence of the actual truth. But they are simply attracting others to themselves. Whereas the actual luminaries, the sun, the moon, and the stars, are directing our vision to something above and beyond our normal experience, to that illumination of which they are actually just a reflection. The golden moon over Nadia, and the supreme sun in Goloka, the child of Nanda Maharaj. Just a distant reflection of whose illumination is dispelling the darkness in this material world. And the appearance of the great saints and the avatars in this world is the ultimate reality to which the sun and the moon are alluding when they shine their light through the parting of the clouds in the dark, rainy season and dispel the illusions of truth and light offered by the fireflies. So, the condition of this material world just prior to the Leela of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is very much reminiscent of the condition of the world just prior and during the first part of the Leela of Sri Advaita Acharya. It was so dark, and teachers of the true religion were practically unavailable, and pseudo gurus, pseudo yogis, pseudo religionists like the fireflies were everywhere, and the world at large was just averse to the principles of devotional service. That was the condition of the world in Advaita Acharya's time. And therefore he fervently prayed for Krishna himself to come down and inspire the world and teach the true nature and function of the soul, which is to serve Krishna and surrender to his mercy, which is our only way out of this dark material world. And it's available to everyone who simply humble themselves to the Lord's mercy and instructions. So, there is just a remarkable similarity between the time of Advaita Acharya and the sequence of events that followed according to his prayers, and the time of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur and this sequence of events fulfilling his prayers. Sri Advaita Acharya prayed for Krishna himself to come down, dispel the darkness of this Kali Yuga. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was in a similarly desperate situation when the pure teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu just 400 years prior had been so obscured by the misconceptions and misrepresentation of the 13 Upasampradayas that an encyclopedia of religious thought, of religious matters compiled about that time defined the Gaudiya Vaishnavism as some deviant sect that proclaim worship of Radha and Krishna by following all kinds of obscene and degraded practices. So what was printed in the encyclopedia of religious thought to define Gaudiya Vaishnavas was a description of the Upasampradayas, which were at that time taken to be the actual representatives of Lord Chaitanya's pure teachings. Such an abominable condition that Gaudiya Vaishnavism had lost all respect in the eyes of cultured people of this world. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur had such a incredible, humanly impossible mission in front of him, trying to restore the dignity of Gaudiya Vaishnavism to the world. And he found it impossible on his own. And therefore, while with every ability at his command, performing Herculean tasks of writing books, of preaching pure Krishna consciousness, but he prayed that without the assistance of Araya Vishnu, he could not be successful. His prayer was answered in 1874 when his fourth son appeared with this umbilical cord wrapped around his neck and across his shoulder like a Brahman thread. And the astrologer noted that all the 32 symptoms of a Mahapurusha were manifest in his body and predicted that he would be world famous as a brilliant teacher of life's ultimate goal. And when the child was 6 months old, during the Rath Yatra, Lord Jagannath's chariot stopped in front of the house of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, whose wife brought out the baby and placed him on the chariot, and the deity's garland fell off onto the child's neck like a garland of victory. And when the child's vocational skills were tested by placing before him the Bhagavatam and the gold and the rice and the other, and just like Lord Gaurang, he embraced the Bhagavatam to his heart. So all the signs were there, even as a baby, that he was the answer to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's prayer. And Srila Prabhupada told a story regarding his own experience in service to his Guru Maharaj. Srila Prabhupada said, whenever we would offer him a mango, which is customary offering to sadhus, and Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati would always refuse and say, no, I cannot accept, I'm an offender. This is a continuation of a vow he made when he was 2 years old. When as a two-year-old child, he took a mango and ate it. And his father, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, stood up and mildly rebuked him, and it hasn't been offered to the deity. You should not take. And Srila Bimala Prasad, his name at that time, meaning the mercy of the Lord's internal energy, rebuked himself. Oh, what evil thoughts have overcome me. I shall never, for the rest of my life, accept mango. This is the proper atonement for one who is ruled, whose evil thoughts are ruled by greed. And Srila Prabhupada commented that he noticed whenever anyone offered him a mango, he'd say, no, I cannot take, I'm an offender. He said, this is determination, characteristic of an acharya. He was so learned that when 16 years old, he formed his August assembly for the discussion of religious, theistic, and philosophical matters. And to join that institution, one had to take a vow of celibacy. And in college, he was so brilliant. Anything he ever read, he would remember. Oh, even when he was 7 years old, he had not only memorized all of Bhagavad Gita, but could explain any verse with elaborate commentary. So by the time he was in college and earned that honorable epithet, Surya Siddhanta, his teacher of the six branches of Vedic wisdom was so amazed by his scholarship, he advised him to continue his studies. And Srila Bimala Prasad at the time commented that my life is for the single-minded cultivation of the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. My study of the six branches of Vedic wisdom is simply secondary to substantiate that main purpose. So by this time, by his glories which had become known in Jagannath Puri, the place of his birth, as well as Navadvip, where he was very active in assisting his father in preaching and establishing the lost holy places of Lord Gauranga's pastimes, many pseudo-gurus were desiring the prestige of having him as their disciple. He was not interested. In fact, he found no one other than his father who was actually so inspiring. And all his life thus far was dedicated mainly to the study of the books of his fathers, as well as Narottam Das Thakur, and assisting his father in editing, proofreading, and publishing books. But when Gaurakishore Das Babaji, who had spent most of his previous lila in Braj, came to Navadvip Dham to see the places of Lord Gauranga's pastimes, the lila sthans which were being revealed by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and Bimal Prasad. And this sequence of events is so much like Narottam Das Thakur in his approach to Lokanath Goswami seeking Diksha. Bimal Prasad, this great learned scholar, saw in the humble demeanor and divine purity of Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, his guru, and wanted to take initiation from him, which his father fully endorsed. But just like with Narottam Das Thakur and Lokanath Goswami, Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji, such a humble Paramahamsa, was very disinclined, first of all, to have any disciples, what to speak of one so erudite as Bimal Prasad. So he kept refusing. And finally, by his persistence, seeking shelter in Diksha, he told Bimal Prasad that, "I will have to ask Mahaprabhu. His blessings must be sought." And the next day he asked, "Did you ask Mahaprabhu?" "No, I forgot." The next day he asked, "Did you ask Mahaprabhu?" "I asked, but he didn't answer." So, then, his heart breaking, Bimal Prasad said, "If there is no mercy by those who worship the crest jewel of all debauchees, Sri Krishna, if there is no mercy in the form of shelter, then there's no reason to sustain my life." And just crying, his heart broken, seeing that he was so determined, so sincere, that he would forfeit his life if not receiving the purpose of life in the form of initiation into the spiritual path. Gaurakishore Das Babaji, just like Lokanath Goswami in days of yore, his heart melted, and he awarded him Diksha, imparting to him the name Varshabhanavi Devi Daita Das, the lover of the daughter of King Rishabhanu. So, which is also very, anyway, in 1931, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, as he was later to name himself, taking initiation, giving himself before a picture of his Guru Maharaj, sannyas, which he considered essential, for fulfilling the desires of his father and his guru to spread the teachings of Lord Gauranga worldwide. So, to seeking the blessings and the empowerment to fulfill such a superhuman, divine function. In 1931, he took a vow, following in the footsteps of Haridas Thakur, to chant 1 billion names of the Lord, which means 192 rounds a day for 9 years. So making a little hut at Rajapatna, the site of the house of Chandrasekhar, Lord Gauranga's own uncle, which is considered the banks of Radhakund in Navadvip Dham. He sat in a little hut and performing such tapasya, that his Guru Maharaj commented, I see the renunciation of Rupa and Raghunath in my Prabhu. He addressed his disciples, my Prabhu. See the humility of the Vaishnavas. So Srila Prabhupada commented in this regard that such severe penance and austerity he performed for beginning this movement. And Srila Prabhupada also commented that whenever they offered obeisances to his Guru Maharaj, he would respond with, Dasosmi, I am your servant. He had such a heartfelt desire to preach the true teachings of the six Goswamis, as was instructed by his father and affirmed by his guru, that Srila Gaurakishore Das Babaji bestowed upon him a type of mercy that no one else ever received. Gaurakishore Das Babaji, in his humility, would not allow anyone to ever touch his lotus feet, but he placed those lotus feet on the head of his beloved disciple, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, who commented that by the touch of his lotus feet, the whole phenomenal world just disappeared, and he became most fixed and infused with his purpose in life to assist his father and please his guru in the fulfillment of their dreams, which is to spread the teachings of the six Goswamis around the world. So, while he was actually, after the disappearance pastimes of his beloved father and guru, he was contemplating how he would be enabled to fulfill the mission imparted by his two spiritual guides. And this responsibility was weighing very heavily upon him in their separation. And at this point, he was very beautifully personifying the definition of misery as given by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in response to Ramananda Rai's question, what is the most unbearable misery? And Mahaprabhu replied, other than absence of the association of devotees, I do not know of any unbearable misery. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati was feeling that unbearable misery in the absence of his spiritual guides, Gaurakishore Das Babaji and Bhaktivinoda Thakur. While, on the other hand, the heavy responsibility of fulfilling their desire that the teachings of the six Goswamis be spread worldwide. And how he was contemplating, how can I fulfill the heartfelt desires of my gurus? I have no men, no money, no support, and just like Srila Prabhupada's prayers written on the Jaladutta, in his humility thinking, I have no knowledge, no intelligence, no learning. So how will I attract anyone to assist and take this message of Mahaprabhu seriously? So one night, when he was taking rest, in a divine vision, he saw the entire Panchatattva and their Sankirtan party coming from the east to the Natya Mandir in the temple at the Yogapith, which his father had inaugurated the building. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati continued. And when all these great souls, including Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, Jagannath Das Babaji, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, and Gaurakishore Das Babaji, amongst the Panchatattva and their eternally liberated associates, and they all spoke to him and encouraged him, do not worry. With great enthusiasm, preach the holy name, abode, form, attributes, associates, and pastimes of Godhead in various places. We're all with you, and we will help. the support of unlimited people, countless wealth, and boundless learning are all seeking the blessings of being engaged in the service of your preaching, and they will be manifest when necessary. No type of worldly hindrance or danger will be able to obstruct this great work of yours, because we are all with you. In 1922, I believe, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was preaching in Calcutta. And Srila Prabhupada was invited to attend his lectures, to have his darshan. But Srila Prabhupada's impression of what people were saying, he's a real sadhu, was tainted by his experience of sadhus in his house, where his father, Gaur Mohan Day, would invite so many sadhus every day, serving them and seeking their blessings. Then my son, be a great servitor of Srimati Radharani and preacher of life's ultimate goal in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So Srila Prabhupada was not very much interested in sadhus based on the experience of the kind of people came to his father's house to accept his hospitality in the name of being sadhus. Gaur Mohan Day was so obedient to the principle of hospitality to chance guests, very liberal in serving anyone in the attire of sadhu, but Srila Prabhupada commented that they were all a disappointing bunch, that they were not real sadhus. Someone invited by his friend, because he was the natural leader of his friends, to come and see this sadhu, he wasn't interested, but his friend, Naren, he practically dragged him there onto the rooftop where Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was giving darshan to his followers and some guests, and as is custom, bowing down, offering obeisances at the feet of this sadhu. Srila Prabhupada commented that he was so astounded before they'd even gotten up from offering obeisances, this sadhu had given him his life's mission, addressing Srila Prabhupada and his friend Naren, that you are educated young men, you should preach this message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the English-speaking worlds. And Srila Prabhupada, whose attire at that time identified him as a follower of Gandhi and seeking Swaraj, liberation from the British domination, responded, as any follower of Gandhi would, that we're a dependent nation. We're dominated by a foreign power. Who will take us seriously in our propagating Mahaprabhu's mission when we're like a slave country? And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati's request impressed Srila Prabhupada, that the message of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is too urgent. It's the only important thing. It's the ultimate reality. It is not dependent on who's ruling the country or any external circumstances, and it's too urgent. The people are in need of this one thing only. It cannot wait. Srila Prabhupada is so impressed that when they left and his friend asked him, what do you think of this sadhu? Srila Prabhupada commented, the message of Mahaprabhu is in very good hands. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was so impressed at Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa Puja offering, especially the one stanza, absolute is sentient, thou hast proved. Impersonal calamity you have removed. He showed it to all the devotees and ordered that from then on that anything that Srila Prabhupada wrote should be printed. And (clears throat) In the 1930s, when Srila Prabhupada was visiting with Guru Maharaj at Radhakund, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati made the prophetic comment, "There will be fire," meaning the fire of personal ambition, which will rage havoc in the mat. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati told Srila Prabhupada, "I had a desire to print books," which of course he did. But he told Srila Prabhupada, "If you ever get money, then print books." Which he likened to the Brihat Mridanga. Regular Mridanga can be heard for a few blocks. But the Brihat Mridanga, the printing press, accompanies the chanting of the holy name and inspires the chanting of the holy name worldwide. So he gave that instruction at Radhakund. And he confided in Srila Prabhupada. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and Srila Prabhupada had such an intimate friendship that he confided in him. Then when we were struggling to raise maybe 200 rupees for a rented building, we were struggling so hard to preach, we were happy. We were united. But now that we have this big palace with marble walls, everyone is fighting. Who will get this room and that room and this position and that? And he said, "Better we take the marble from the walls, sell it to get money, and print books." So, Srila Prabhupada is such a precious example of taking the orders of the spiritual master to heart. In 1972, I observed that when Srila Prabhupada visited the press, just a few blocks from the temple of Brooklyn, Henry Street, he was very attentive to every detail. I was working on the machines, the printing presses, and Srila Prabhupada kind of noticed the machines that were printing the books. He was especially attentive to the artists and inspiring them how to create these windows to the spiritual world. Toward his... And of course, Srila Prabhupada was thinking that since he was destined to be one of the wealthiest men in India, he should just make money and print books. But then everything started collapsing in his life. And then when he came upon that verse in the Bhagavatam where Krishna states that for those who I especially favor, I take away everything. And he was horrified that maybe that's what's happening to him. And he confided in one of his godbrothers who affirmed that, yes, Krishna's mercy is manifesting in your life. There was many major controversies and attacks on the preaching and even the life of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. When he was just very young, and his father was bedridden at the time of the great controversy instigated by the Smarta Brahmanas, who were propagating that even if one is an Uttama Adhikari, if he's not born in a Brahmin family, he cannot give initiation. And no one who does not take birth in a seminal Brahmana family can worship the Shaligram Shiva. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur wanted to to defeat such misconceptions which go against the whole teachings of Mahaprabhu. And even like Shyamananda Pandit was not even born in a Brahmin family, but he initiated some Brahmanas like Sikananda, who was Brahmin. born in Brahma family. So Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur was lamenting, isn't there anyone anywhere who can defeat these people? And his son, Bhima Prasad, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, wrote a paper which so thoroughly defeated their propaganda that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his bedridden condition, just sat up and said, now finally, the sun of Mahaprabhu's teachings has risen to illumine the face of the Vaishnava world. And when he went to that conference, in the name of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, his son, and began preaching the glories of the Brahmanas, the caste Brahmanas were delighted. But then when he started preaching the glories of the Vaishnavism, the Vaishnavas, the comparison between the two, and the qualification of a Brahman, which is not due to birth, but temperament. And he so thoroughly silenced the whole controversy with the teachings of the six Goswamis that the crowd, other than the smarta Brahmanas, was so enlivened to hear the truth that they were crowding in to touch his lotus feet, which he would never allow. And the police could not hold the crowds back. So the police told the people, just hold back for a minute and all your desires will be fulfilled. And they grabbed Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati and took him into a private room and forcibly washed his lotus feet against his... But anyway, they took that water out, that charnamrita, and distributed it to the masses. And then they apologized to Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. We did this just to protect you from being crushed by the crowds. Later on in his life, when he was advised by a doctor to refrain from such extensive preaching because of a heart condition, just like Srila Prabhupada had a heart condition, which did not deter his preaching. No external circumstances can impede the preaching. He responded that life is for the glorification of the topics of Krishna. And if that is stopped or impeded, what is the use of maintaining this life? Our span of life on earth is short. We will be crowned with success only if our lifetime wears out with the constant chanting of the holy names and glorification of Lord Krishna. So, when Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati dispatched disciples to go west to preach, and some were actually a little bit successful in Europe by even bringing back some German scholars to take initiation from Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, Srila Prabhupada commented that when Lord Zetland, who was actually very favorable towards the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, having been government officer in Bengal previously, and he arranged programs for them, and he was inspired by their work, and he asked, Swamiji, can you make us into Brahmins? And he said, yes. Just give up illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication, and gambling. And Lord Zetland emphatically responded, impossible. And it actually remained pretty much impossible until the grace of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati came to the West in the form of Srila Prabhupada's pure and perfect demonstration of what it means to follow the orders of the spiritual master as one's life and soul. So, in 1936, as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati was preparing to resume his eternal service in Vrindavan, he asked Srila Sridhar Maharaj to sing Sri Rupa Manjari Para of Narottam Das Thakur. And he asked Naveen Krishna to sing Shikshastikam, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's commentary on Shikshastikam. And his last two statements were love and rapture. Both should have the same end and goal in view. And he announced Please accept my blessings to you all, present and absent. And there, please bear in mind, he said, his last words, our sole duty in religion is to spread and propagate service to the Lord and service to his devotees. Thereafter, he left this mortal world just in time to resume his eternal service to Radha and Krishna at Radhakund. At the time where they rest in such tight embrace to appear as one person, which they did in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So just at that time, pre-dawn pastimes of Radha and Krishna, correlating to the time when Mahaprabhu is gathering his associates and going out in the streets in Harinam Sankirtan, reminding everyone, Jeev Jago, Gaura Tanda Gore, Kota Nida Jayamaya, Pishachira Gore. Wake up, as the eastern horizon becomes tinged by the red, heralding the rising of the sun. Just at that time, the sun which illumined the Vaishnava world and spread began what Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur envisioned. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati ordered was actually fulfilled by our Eternal Father, our Lord and Master Srila Prabhupada. So you see how this endeavor to bring the teachings of the six Goswamis, the holy name which Mahaprabhu predicted would spread and resound to every town and village of the earth, it was a mission which necessitated tremendous cooperation. And Srila Prabhupada, especially, I mean, even here in New Vrindavan, he instructed the devotees to cooperate together to reveal this New Vrindavan to the world. And as he was preparing to leave this world, Srila Prabhupada commented, your love will be demonstrated by how you cooperate to push on this movement. So, cooperation necessitates putting aside all egoistic conceptions, desires, priorities, and humbling ourselves to the mission of Sri Guru, Sri Radha. That will be the demonstration of our love to Srila Prabhupada. That will be our participation in the cooperation and teamwork of great souls whose combined efforts in love and trust and faith invoke the blessings of the six Goswamis and Mahaprabhu and Nityananda to fulfill actually the prediction of Veda Vyasa in the form of Vrindavan Das Thakur, that those who are fortunate, which has a lot to do with those who are cooperative, will see the pastimes of the Lord transpiring before their eyes even today. So we saw in the Leela of Srila Prabhupada a glimpse of the dark clouds of Kali Yuga parting and allowing the illumination of the sun and moon of Nitai and Gauranga to dispel the darkness in this world for a while, to give us a glimpse of the dawning age, of the golden age, preparing to dawn. But we should be very cautious, because as Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, the path of devotees is strewn with thorns. Kali, personification of quarrel and hypocrisy, will utilize everything within his empowered ability to break the solidarity of the Vaishnava movement. And Krishna allows terrible persecutions to befall his devotees. Srila Prabhupada said that in a very intimate discussion with Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he revealed how the smartest planned to kill him. He said they went to the police, the chief of police, and offered him 25,000 rupees and revealed that we have a plan regarding Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. So you take this bribe and don't do anything. And Srila Prabhupada said, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati said, the officer said, of course we accept bribes, but not for a sadhu. Never for a sadhu. So that chief of police went to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati and said, be careful. Take care. There is danger. And once on their Vrindavan Parikrama, when the smartas had all the shops closed so the devotees could not even get supplies on their parikrama, and they hired thugs to throw bricks and stones at the Sankirtan party led by Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati. And at one time, his life was in such dire danger that Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati had to change his clothes with those of one disciple who wore white. One of his disciples wore his sapphire cloth because he looked like him. Very tall, thin, had features just like Bhakti Siddhanta. He put on his sapphire cloth to be killed in place of his guru. His life was under attack. Of course, by Krishna's mercy, no one was killed. But you see how Kali, the personification of quarrel and hypocrisy, will do anything to break the solidarity of the Vaishnava movement. And Krishna allows that as an opportunity for us to show our love, show our trust, show the expression of our love and cooperation to push on this glorious movement. That will be the demonstration of our love to Srila Prabhupada, just as his life was a whole offering of love to his Guru Maharaj, whose life was an offering of dedication and surrender to his Guru Maharaj and his father, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And we would have no good fortune if it was not for their sacrifice and love and compassion. And our duty and reciprocation is to carry on this mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, following in the footsteps of Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, the whole parampara, to Lord Gauranga and Nitai, leading us on the path, bestowing their blessings that we attain success on our path back home to the eternal pastimes of Radha and Krishna Vrindavan. Thank you very much. Are there any questions or comments? Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. His divine base, Sri Bhakti Vedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Bhakti Gaur Pranam. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes.